We're going to talk about foraging populations and distances of the Heteroptermes aureus, which is a desert subterranean termite. Most of you in this audience may or may not be familiar with the desert subterranean termite, but we're going to talk about that a little bit. This project, I want to specify this by starting by saying this originally project was about baiting and using the Centricon system to bait out these subterranean termites. However, that's not in the conversation here. I just want to make sure that that's understood first. Okay, so the objectives were to determine number of colonies per structure, estimate the foraging populations associated with each one of those structures, determine a maximum foraging distances between monitoring stations, which I will talk a little bit more about as we get into this, and determine the minimum total foraging distance between monitoring stations. The other two objectives in the paper that we have published in JEE, where we looked at the characterizations of the cuticular hydrocarbons, which again is not being presented, along with looking at the integration of soil soldier ratios between the different colonies. And this was published in JEE just this past year. So, Heteroptermes aureus, this is the beast that I deal with in Arizona. We don't know how far it goes actually into New Mexico, if it even goes into New Mexico. We do know that it goes into Southern California, all the way into Palm Springs, etc. It's a lower desert termite. And because we have a tendency in the desert to just wipe the land out and put the homes on top of it, you remove somewhat of their feeding. They don't have too many other choices but to deal with what they have in front of them. So it's the third of the three. Obviously, you've been hearing more about the other two today. And they do attack dry and sound wood, and they are not nearly as destructive. Mostly what they are is a nuisance pest, but they can be an awful nuisance. They have one characteristic is they have typical drop tubes coming out of the ceiling. Homeowners don't particularly care to wake up in the morning and seeing a foot-long drop tube in their living room. Just kind of freaks them out a little bit. Okay, so we're going to look at three sites, which I will describe as we continue on through. It's a classic triple mark recapture method. The marked or dyed termites, and they are released over a three-month period. We have five weekly cycles per structure. We monitoring stations were located 10 feet or 3.3 meters around each structure. So this is site number one. It's the Environmental Research Lab down near the Tucson Airport. It's part of the University of Arizona. You can see here it's a split level. This is kind of the basement area. And this is another photo from a different angle. But I'll be talking more about the structures just so you have a picture of what we're going to look at. This is the second site. This is what we call the shrimp house. This is over on the West Ag campus. And this structure is entirely below ground. It's about approximately 10 feet below ground. It was originally kind of like a head house. They have a section in the beginning part of it, which I'll show you where the infestation is. You literally walk down a ramp and walk into this structure. So, and the third one is an actual residency, typical slab grade type of setup. This house is approximately 15 years old, and none of these structures have received a termiticide application in over 5 years. So there is no residue issue associated with any of these structures. So the monitoring stations that we developed at this point was, as you can see, the Centricon systems. They were, again, 10 feet around the perimeter each of these, along with what I call our high tech. This is PVC pipe. And when we originally started this, we had one big roll of of cardboard using a bee flute. The bee flute's important because the termites, the heterotermes, like to go up into that bee flute size with a an ash type wood in the center as a holding. We have since gone to actually have three smaller ones, and for this test it would have been much better to have three because of the disturbance factor that I think plays a part in what we'll see in the number of termites that we actually collected. So the basic procedure is all the monitoring collars were sampled and termites returned to the lab for individual processing. Every single termite was there, was counted. Collections made every 7 days after release of the marked termites for a 21-day period. The termites found within that station contained marked termites during the 21 days were considered nest mates. And all the foraging nest mates were fed dyed termites for 7 days and then returned to their original station. So typical of what you would see, the Nile blue. What we tried to get, what we found out was, if we didn't have a couple hundred termites, for example, if you, I know some of you may consider a couple hundred termites nothing, but in our world, a couple hundred termites are doing fairly well. Well, sometimes the stations would only produce maybe 50 or 60. What you end up with is trying to bait 50 or 60 of them. Most of the time, with a week's time period, the mortality was too high to actually put them back in. So we had to look at stations that actually had over 200 termites in them. And they're typical, as you would imagine. Many of us have seen some blue, some white over that time period. Okay, then we ran the typical weighted mean model estimating termite foraging populations. We did the Lincoln Index used in the first remark recapture cycle. We looked at maximum foraging distance between monitors, essentially taking the two furthest points and figuring how far they were between them. And then we also came up with a minimum total foraging distance among all the stations. So we tried to get an idea of the distance, not because many of us have looked at like paragons and trying to figure that out. We did not do that. We only looked at the distance between the two points. Okay, so where are our results? We have, many of you may or may not be aware that we have two species that have a tendency to compete for the same resource around structures. Gnathothermes plexus is one of those. They were present at all three sites, but because of their numbers were so small, we didn't include them in any of the results that we did. The second thing was, due to the low numbers of termites collected in the Centricon stations, they were not utilized. I recognize the fact that Centricon was not intended to be a collection device. So from that point of view, we only looked at the circular above ground station, monitoring stations that we've developed, and looked at those. And in fact, if you counted all the termites that we were able to get, 97% of them were actually found in the above ground monitors. For some unknown reason, as you can imagine, in our world, again, in the desert, they much prefer to come up into a station and feed on that than they would in the ground. We collected and marked over 11,000 foraging termites and released over 10,000. About 90% went back into the stations. And due to the small number of marked termites, and we recognize that from, again, many of the other mark recapture, if you look in a coptotermes or a tix, you end up with quite a lot of them compared to this. We estimated using both marked and unmarked termite. So here's the structure number one, site number one, ERL. And over on the left-hand side, you can see Centricon, and then we have collars that were not occupied, collars that were occupied, and then where the termite tubes were. And in site one, inside the structure, we had termites, live activity in this structure over here. So we introduced in August, all of these sites were put up in the spring of 2000. So in the fall of 2000, we ended up putting we collected termites in number nine here, collar number 9, and then we dyed them blue and then put them back in, and you can see where they ended up. In fact, number 16 down here, every single collection date that the three collection dates we had, we found blue termites in there. So they traveled quite a bit of distance for that. And the picture over here gives you a little idea of the structure itself. Okay, in the shrimp house, again, going back, looking at the house here, again, we're looking at introducing termites in August. And in this right here, in number 19, and you can see that they actually traveled all the way over to 9 here and up into 37 and over into 27. Now, we also found in this particular location, we had places where there were non-blue termites. For example, in number 8, number 33, some of the other locations. Now, one thing we did on this location only was I put a number of monitors 6 meters away from the structure to see what would happen, and as a result, we found blue all the way out to here, okay? And in the head house, between the head house and the shrimp house, you could literally walk in this door, walk under here, and look up, and they were climbing the wall on this particular structure. Now, in the other house, in the last location, the Olson, we introduced blue termites down here in September in number 19, and we collected them all the way at the other side of the house. Now, remember, in the first two, there was little basements associated with it. Here, because it's just on a slab on grade, you can see that we connected the dots through the underside of the structure itself, okay? The others, we assumed they followed the guidelines around to get to their locations. So, and you can see there is one and five both had non-blue termites in them. Now, if we kept it going for another couple of rounds, will they would have ended up there or not? I don't know. Okay. So from that, here's a summary of what we ended up with. In site one, we had 16 collars. 7 of the collars had foragers in it. 7 of those, or 100% of them, had marked termites in them. And we started out with 782, and we actually marked over 4,000 of them. In site number two, we had 39 stations. 23 had foragers in them. 8 of them were dyed. And we started out with 371 and then increased it all the way up to 1,044 additional blue-dyed termites were included. In number 3, there were 30 collars, 16 had termites in them, 10 of them ended up with blue, and you can see the number that were associated with that. So what happens is in the first recapture, we had 4,000, almost 4,500 termites captured totally in the whole structure, okay, 30 of them were blue termites. And then the second was 13 with 9 all the way down to 49 and 8. And you can see within 1 week, 2 weeks, what you're getting is that reduction in the number of termites are actually being taken out, even though the number of percentage-wise a blue termite still remains fairly high. In number 2, we ended up with 3,000. It went up a little bit, but only 2 blue, and then way down compared to that of 654 total with 5 blue. At the Olson location, they had over 13,000 that we collected. And then it went down to 8,000 and down to 2,000 with 27 of them, of those left that were blue. So. Now, looking at the sites from the point of view of the Lincoln Index and the weighted mean index, if you look at these versus the one below, they are the same because it was only one colony. They had the maximum distance was 26 meters with a minimum total foraging distance of 297 meters. Now, that was only with collars with marked termites. Now, when we go down and decided, because the numbers were so low, we collapsed them all into one, and you can see that there wasn't much change, a little bit in number two site, but what you ended up with was a little bit larger of the maximum and quite a bit more of the minimum total foraging distance that would be established in each of the locations. So, in summary, what did we find? The number of termites per structures was uncertain, only because we're not sure whether some of those others that you can claim as colony number two wouldn't have ended up being associated with the initial colony. So we were uncertain. We didn't want to go down too far on that. The foraging populations that were established with the Lincoln Index and the mean weighted means were within previously published estimates of populations in the native desert. So in other words, the numbers were not much different than what was published previously by Susan and Jones and Haverty, Mike Haverty. So we're not seeing any differences because of the structure. And the maximum distance between that you could say that the blue marked termites traveled was anywhere between 26 and 62 meters, which I found kind of interesting based on what Joe was mentioning about some of the colonies being really small of 8 to 10 meters. So I don't know. Maybe we got small colonies, but they like to travel quite a distance. And the last thing is the minimum total forage distance was between 297 meters to 2,427 meters. So again, that's a minimum, depending on how, you know, and that calculation has always been discussed in the literature, etc. So with that, I'll answer any questions and we'll go from there.
There's no time.
I'll talk to you afterward, Rod. You use up